Sarah Louise has come down from New York from our General Service Office to share with us our General Service Office session. I've met her several times in Macon at a convention, and I had the privilege of spending a little bit of time with her at the General Service Conference in April this past year. Hazel Rice, who was to come for us, was taken ill. But they never seemed to worry about that up there because there's always somebody ready to go. And of course, Cora Louise was ready to go when the thing happened. Both of these girls, I think, are the closest of the two in New York to me. Although this coming year, I'll be working with another one on the committee that I happen to be on. And so I'm going to have the privilege of getting closer personally with another one. It's pretty hard long distance. The Cora Louise and Hazel I've learned to love very dearly, and Cora Louise is going to take our meeting now on the General Service Office message.
Thanks, Bob, and hi, everybody. As I said on Friday afternoon when I spoke, I'm here in Hazel's place, not to take her place, because I don't feel that I could do that. But it is true that in our office, when someone is not available to do something that he is assigned to do, there always does seem to be someone who can fill the gap. There are people who've done it for me, and I'm grateful to have this opportunity to do it for Hazel. I'm sorry she's sick, but I'm very happy that I've had this opportunity to be back in Georgia. One of the very first trips that I took from the General Service Office as a staff member was to your convention in Macon 5 years ago. I met a lot of you then, and I've seen a number of you several times since then, and it's great to be back again. On Friday afternoon, I talked a little bit about Bill, our co-founder, but because a lot of people weren't here then, I've had questions from people wanting to know how he is. So I thought I might just mention again the latest information that I have on Bill's condition, which was Friday morning when I left New York. Bill has been back in the hospital for a couple of weeks, and on Friday he was supposed to have surgery. Not very serious surgery, and the doctor did not feel that it was anything to be particularly worried about. As you know, he has a serious case of emphysema, and when we were in Miami Beach, he had a slight case of pneumonia. And ever since then, the doctor has been very careful to make sure that Bill does not get in any crowds and that he sees very few people and only one or two at a time, because the danger of a viral infection with his respiratory ailment would really be quite severe, and I think the suffering would be quite heavy as far as Bill is concerned. Because of this, for the very first time, he had to miss his anniversary birthday dinner, which was held in New York last Saturday. Now, this was Bill's 36th anniversary, his personal 36th anniversary. And it was a terrible disappointment to him not to be able to be there and take part in it. It was a terrible disappointment to the 2,500 or so people who came to this dinner hoping to hear Bill. But as I said on Friday afternoon, I think a pretty wonderful thing happened. There was somebody, of course, who was available to be there in Bill's place, not to take his place, of course. And that person was Herb, who used to be the manager of our AA General Service Office in New York and is now retired. So Herb was asked by the New York Intergroup Office, which sponsors this dinner every year, to come down and speak in Bill's place. And he made an AA talk. He told his story, but I think he also told us some things that all of us very much wanted to hear. And once again, I'm so overwhelmed with gratitude for this fellowship and amazement at the kind of intuition and wisdom and insight and prudence and Yankee practicality. Bill is a Vermonter, so he calls himself a Yankee trader. the sort of Yankee practicality that Bill has had as far as AA is concerned. He always seems to have been able to sort of sniff out and sense what it was we needed when we needed it. And I'm referring now, of course, to the fact that the structure that Bill provided for the fellowship of AA is here now. And no matter what happens, AA will carry on because Bill had the wisdom and the foresight to provide us with this structure which will make this possible for us. Herb talked about this just a little bit, but about the fact that whereas Bill was not there with us on a Saturday night, he had given us the machinery through which we can carry on as far as we can foresee. And this has really been sort of the AA process from the beginning. Bill has always had this kind of foresight. Almost every time he's come up with what would seem like a new idea for AA, he met with a lot of opposition. There were people who did not think that the book should be written, the original book, Alcoholics Anonymous, the book from which our fellowship derived its name. They had the feeling that, you know, that this is simply a one-to-one proposition, that we carry the message to each other, and why do we need to write this down? But eventually, he was able to persuade people that we did need a document in writing that would not only, that would tell other people about us, because among those other people were the sick alcoholics who needed to know about Alcoholics Anonymous. And now, how many people that all of us know first learned about AA through reading the big book? In our mail, we hear from people all the time who say they got sober as a result of reading the big book when they were out of the country, when they were at sea, when they were overseas during the war, or something like this. They got hold of the book. They got sober. They started communicating with people in our office, and another AA and another AA group got started. The same thing happened when the 12 steps were finally written down. This was the accumulated experience of the earliest AA members. This is how it works. This is what we did. This was finally written down. And then when the traditions were written down, once again, these traditions came into being not because these were high-sounding principles, but because the life of the early AA groups was threatened by various kinds of disagreements and controversies. So every one of these traditions came about in answer to a specific problem which seemed to be jeopardizing the unity of the AA groups. And then when Bill realized that Dr. Bob was dying, and realized that the time would come when AA would have to carry on without either one of its founders, he began to work out the idea of the conference structure, which would give us a way to carry on. And at this time in St. Louis, I believe he said that he gave the fellowship of AA to the members because he felt that we had come of age and that AA was capable of handling its own affairs. Now this, what we call a service structure, is really just that. When I was brand new in AA, like every other alcoholic, the thing that was of primary interest to me, the thing that was almost exclusively of interest to me, was the recovery part of the program, the steps. When we went to our first meeting, that's my husband and me, he's not an alcoholic, but he went with me. When we went to the first meeting, we brought a lot of literature home, and I got completely involved in reading the recovery literature and reading about the steps and in reading the stories in the big book. My husband, however, was much more impressed with the 12 traditions. I mean, after all, he didn't have to get sober. He was interested in this fellowship that his wife was becoming associated with. And he was absolutely amazed. And he said, I can't get over this. It's hard to believe that any organization in the world today could have been inspired with this kind of wisdom and far-seeing He said, I think these traditions are the most inspired things that I've ever seen. And I said, well, that's just fine, isn't it? And then I went on back to what I was reading. I had been here about service for quite a long time. As time went on, though, I began to realize that I wouldn't have a recovery story to tell, that there wouldn't have been any recovery for me if there hadn't been unity in AA provided by these traditions, and there wouldn't be any unity and therefore no recovery unless various kinds of people had performed various kinds of services that made that AA group be there, with the doors open and the coffee pot on and the literature out on the table and the speakers on the platform, unless there had been someone there to answer that telephone when we called up to find out where the AA meeting was. All of these things were services. We have a trustee who says that service begins with a broom. Well, in my group, we didn't have to sweep, but we did have to empty the ashtrays. So service began with emptying the ashtrays and moving and making the coffee and moving the chairs around. Everything we do in AA is a service. What I'm really trying to say, though, I believe, is that service is a part, really, of everybody's AA story. Not just a part of the story of those of us who work in service jobs or who work in the service structure in the different areas. I don't think we'd have any story if it weren't for service and if it weren't for unity. And so I think these three things are one, as they are represented in our triangle: recovery, unity, and service. Without any one of these arms, the triangle would collapse. And there would be no recovery for us without unity in service. And, of course, we wouldn't have unity in service if we didn't have recovery. So they're all mutually dependent. As all of you know, we have a general service conference every year in April in New York. But that conference really begins in rooms like this and in meetings like this. It really begins with all of you, because this is the way that Bill conceived it. We hear the conference referred to as the voice of AA, as the group conscience of AA. But the final responsibility and the ultimate authority rest right here in rooms like this with people like you who are members of the AA groups. It is in the AA groups that the group conscience and the voice of AA starts. But how are we going to find a way to communicate this voice from the groups to the board of trustees through the staff members who simply read the mail and answer the letters and try to take care of the little details that have to be looked after? We're just the people who do the work that comes in to be done. We're not the ones who make the decisions. What kind of structure were we going to have that would enable us to have this two-way communication? AA belongs to the membership. The membership is in AA groups all over the world. And so when Bill was thinking of this structure, he began right there with the people to whom AA belongs, the membership. And the membership are in the AA groups. And so he suggested that the groups elect a general service representative. This representative from each AA group would meet together with all the other general service representatives from the groups in a state or in an area, and they would elect one person to come to New York to represent them. So through your being at meetings like this, communicating with your delegate who comes to New York, communicates with other delegates, 90 of them, from all over the United States and Canada, expressing your wishes, your will, your problems, your successes, your sharing with the Board of Trustees, and then at the conference, Your delegate hears these same things expressed by a delegate who represents another set of people from another part of the world, and he comes back then and shares all of this with you. At the same time at this conference, of course, those of us who work in your service office make reports about what we're doing, what we have done in the past year. It is your office. We work for you, and you have a right to know what we're doing. At the same time, the trustees and their various committees make reports on what they've been doing through the year, and your delegate can come back and communicate this information to you. We have a little pyramid here. It begins with the group who send a GSR to an assembly meeting. At the assembly meeting, through the GSRs and, of course, the committeemen, they communicate they're sharing their thinking to the delegate who comes to New York and shares it with others like him and with all of us who work in the office, and then all the delegates go back and bring this variety of information to all of you. Now, sometimes there may be a lot more information than you really want to hear, but at least you have the opportunity to hear what you need to know. So you're the one who has the opportunity to make the selection about what you can use. But we have represented there in New York at the conference, of course, delegates who come from heavily populated areas, also delegates that come from sparsely populated areas. The way AA functions in a big city and the way it functions in a very small place are quite different. But you have the opportunity to meet a lot of other people who are functioning in small places, as well as to hear what's happening in big cities where they have an intergroup office and very active institutions committees and very active PI committees and things of this kind. It's a way that we share what are mutual questions, mutual problems, mutual successes, the way we can all begin to listen to the grass, to hear the way the wind is blowing, the directions in which we need to move. You can tell us what we're not doing that we need to do. And we can then share with you the things that we hear that people are doing that you may not know about. Then we have the opportunity to share what you share with us with people from all over the world who are in touch with us in our office. I was coming back from a meeting with an AA man on an airplane several months ago, and this man works in an alcoholism agency, actually. And we were talking about the kind of problems that you have in an office or in an organization or business. He said something which is not particularly revelatory. If you think of it, I'm sure everybody knows this, but I thought a lot about it. He said, any time you have a problem on a staff or in an office or in a meeting or between groups of people, you can almost always trace it back to the fact that somebody failed to tell somebody else what they needed to know. A failure of communication. Someone didn't tell someone what he needed to know, and this is where the trouble starts. This is really what we're trying to do. This is the point of the whole conference structure. It's the point of your general service committee. It's the point of our office to keep the lines of communication open, to make sure that we tell you what we're doing, that you want and need to know, and to make sure that you tell us what you think we ought to know, what we are not doing that we should be doing, or what we're doing that we should not be doing. If we don't talk to each other, if we don't communicate with each other, we'll have trouble. If we do, if we keep these lines of communication open, we have a pretty good chance. And that's really what it's all about, is to have real communication, real sharing from the groups through the delegate to the conference and back again. Now, I don't really want to talk any longer. I don't know that I've told you anything you wanted to hear, and there may be a lot of things that you would like to ask questions about that if I don't know the answer, I might know where I could find out the answer. So if you'd like to ask any questions, that would be fine. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, Cora Louise. Who has some questions for Cora Louise to answer for us?
I forgot to say two things. One is that I don't believe this has happened in Georgia because your state committee takes care of this. The directory cards for the 1971 World Directory have been mailed out to all the groups during the course of this month. I believe in Georgia this is handled by the secretary of your committee. It's really extremely important to fill in the cards with the correct information and get them back. The World Directory is the meeting list for a great many people, for people who are traveling throughout the United States. I mean, this is their lifeline, to be able to get into a town at night, open the World Directory, and make a telephone call and find somebody on the other end of the line. It's vital for us to have the correct and up-to-date information about who's to receive the mail for your group. Otherwise, the various mailings that go out of there are missed altogether. We hear from groups all the time, don't you send out World Directories anymore. We had old information for them. The directory went to somebody who's no longer there. There were groups that never even got the flyers in the news about the Miami Convention because the name that we had to receive their mail is no longer active. So please do fill out the cards with the correct information. Those from Georgia, I think, send them to Lillian, and the others, please send them back before December 1st so we can have an up-to-date directory. The other thing is that over on the table, I put out a variety of literature. Some of it may not be familiar to all of you. It wasn't to me when I went to work in the General Service Office, and it was also helpful to me and so interesting to me that I have a feeling other people might like to know about it, too. Now, I was only able to bring one copy of each thing, but if you would like any of these things, if you'll turn them over and write your name and address on the back of the particular publication you want, I'd be happy to have it sent to you. Most of it's free. There is a charge for the PI kit and for the directories, as you know, for the conference report and for the service manual. But anyone who really needs these things and can't afford them, well, we can work out some kind of little arrangement, I'm sure. Thank you.
Georgia has a good reputation on getting their cards in and their registrations in with New York. So those of you who are GSRs who are here today, and if you're not, be sure that your GSR does get their card to the central office at Lillian so that she can get this tabulation made up and send it in New York. Now, do we have any questions that you would like to ask Cora Louise?
Or anything.
In my experience, this problem that you mentioned is universal. There may be places where they welcome a GSR report at an AA meeting. If there are, I have never been to one of those groups. However, most groups, about twice a year at least, do have a business meeting where you elect officers for the group and, you know, make whatever other business decisions you have to make. And I think a GSR can get put on the little agenda to make a report at that meeting. Also, when you get Box 459 and the GSR is the one who does it, You could tell the secretary that you have it, and you'd like to call it to the attention of the group. And maybe if you read it first, you could pick out certain little stories in there that might be of interest to the group and call their attention to it. Also, I think you might make the group aware that if as many as 10 people would like to subscribe to Box 459, would like copies of Box 459, there's a special price for a bulk rate for 10 copies or more. I have not given you an answer to your question, I know, and I didn't really mean to be flip about it. I think it's very serious. But I don't know a direct answer to it, except time and a growing acceptance of the fact that AA doesn't just happen, that a lot of things have to get done by a lot of people in order to have AA keep on happening. Jim, maybe you got some ideas on this, do you? You've probably had more experience than I.
I know one technique is being used in some areas that seems to catch the groups off guard by the GSR, and sometimes we have to catch them off guard. And that is for the GSR maybe once a month to give a 5 or 10 minute unannounced report of activities. Get in cahoots with the chairman, program chairman, and ask that chairman to give you 5 minutes at some closed meeting to make a report on whatever activities you think are pertinent at the time, both Box 459 or area activities. But unannounced. Makes some people mad, but you also get some people informed. And you have a better crowd, too, if you get it unannounced, I find.
Another thing that I remember that I've heard people doing, for instance, by the end of January, the agenda for the conference has to be pretty well set because it has to be approved by the trustees at their meeting, which takes place the end of January. Between now and January, we welcome suggestions for additions to the agenda. I think that this is a legitimate announcement that anybody could ask the secretary to let them make it the group, that the delegate will be going to New York. If there are any questions that people would like to hear discussed, if they'll give them to the GSR can then hand them on to the delegate. In the group I belong to, it's a very large group, and the closed meeting got so large that they broke it up into two sections. And half of the group has a discussion meeting and the other half has a step meeting. And this happens every Monday night. Well, they go through the 12 steps and then they start all over again. And once a year, they have a discussion of the traditions. And they know I'm traditions minded. And so, I guess a year ago, they asked me if I would lead a meeting on the traditions. And, I gave a lot of thought to it, and I worked very hard to make sure I was going to cover it all. And I was really going to, they were going to see like I see what these mean and all this kind of thing. Well, the crowd began to assemble for the step meeting, and the room filled up, and I was so pleased. And all of a sudden, everybody began to get up and leave, and I wondered what had happened, and somebody said, well, they found out it was a traditions meeting. So the room emptied, practically, and there were 10 or 15 people only left. Well, it was all right. We had a marvelous time and a great discussion, and I loved it. So this year, they called and asked me if I would come back and do the traditions meeting. And I kind of laughed, and I said, well, sure, I'll be glad to. So I didn't give it a thought. 10 people were going to be there, I could say the same things I'd said the year before. There was a big crowd. These things come about slowly, I think. Time helps.
I just tell you this, we use roughly what Jim said in our group. We don't make it every fourth week or every fifth week. We stagger it. But we found out early in the game that we get with the chairman and tell him that at the end of the meeting we want to have a short 10-minute session on GSO matters. But we always say there are no dues nor fees and take the collection, then we let the person take on, because we don't want to lose any of the audience. Any other questions? You're not going to get out of questions.
No, but there must be something going on that somebody's talking
about. Don't ask the questions after you leave the room. Now's the time. Usually the discussion happens out in the hall after the meeting is over. Oh, I wish I'd asked her so-and-so. So if anybody does have anything on their mind, while you're thinking up the questions, I'll make a brief announcement of our last assembly meeting. A lot of you were not there because you are not GSRs or members of the assembly that do attend. We had a rather important item of business that came up, and this was the election, or the selection, rather, of our nominee from the state of Georgia to the regional trustee's position, which will be elected in New York next April. Three were presented, and one was selected unanimously. And he's here this morning. Virgil, would you stand up and let them know that you are our nominee from Georgia for the trustee at large, or trustee, regional trustee from Georgia.
Is anybody having trouble getting his literature orders? Oh, that's just too grand. They'll all be so glad to hear it. The last place I went, everybody was having trouble with the literature orders, you know. Couldn't we get them there a little quicker? I see Eileen in the back of the room, and Eileen is going to help us with a little job we have to do. And she and I were talking about it yesterday, and she said that she didn't even know we had such a thing, and I realized that a lot of people don't know we have such a thing, so maybe I'll tell you about this little project she's going to do for us. We have what we call a professional exhibit. This is a great big thing, weighs several tons, it's 8 by 10. It's built by a professional company for us. It tells what Alcoholics Anonymous is, a little bit about the size of the membership, about how to reach AA in your community, and so on. It's quite an attractive exhibit. We've had one for about 10 years. We have two of these at a time. We had one that we used for 5 years, and at the end of that time, it was about worn out. The one we're using now is coming to the end of its 5 years, and it's about time for us to think about getting a new design and a new format and having a new one built. These exhibits are shown 8 or 10 times a year at large national conventions of organizations such as the American Medical Association, the American Public Health Association, the National Conference on Social Welfare, which social workers from all over the country attend, the Congress of Corrections, the National Education Association, which teachers from grade school all the way through universities belong to, and many other people. The National Orthopsychiatric Association, the American Academy of General Practice. These are just the kinds of things that it goes to. It does not go to state or community meetings of this kind, because we simply couldn't afford to have enough of these to cover this many. About 8 or 10 is as many as we can afford in the course of a year. Naturally, these are always shown in large cities, because only large cities have the hotel and restaurant and exhibition facilities to take care of a large convention. These conventions are, you know, the size of the one we had in Miami. Maybe not quite so large, but about like that. It's going to show in Atlanta next week. And when it does, we write to the chairman of the PI committee in the city, if there is one, or the intergroup office, or if the delegate happens to live in the city, we might write to him. and ask them to get a committee of volunteers who will simply man the booth for the purpose of answering questions when people come by and want information. We send out copies of only one pamphlet, which is the standard PI pamphlet, AA in your community. But we have mailing labels. And if the people want additional literature, they can fill out the mailing label, check the type of literature they want. The volunteers return these labels to us, and we fill the order and send it to the individual free of charge. We also send along a well directory with the exhibit, so that the volunteers in Atlanta, for instance, can answer questions from a social worker in Minneapolis or wherever who wants to know how to make contact with AA in Minneapolis. He can open the book and give them the telephone number of the central office or the address of the central office or something of that kind. But I thought you might be interested to know that we have such an exhibit, have had, and have used it quite productively, we feel, for about 10 years. And it's going to be shown next week in Atlanta. At which convention is this, Eileen? The National Adult Education Conference is the one that will be in Atlanta next week. Thank you. Bill wrote a piece for the Grapevine a number of years ago, which has been reprinted, just this piece from the Grapevine, called Problems Other Than Alcohol. This is available free of charge to anyone who wants it. See, on the literature order form, we only list the things that are for sale. So consequently, a lot of people don't know about the things for which there is no charge, which are there, and we call them service material. For this reason, and because this problem that you mentioned comes up so often these days, we may price this at very low and add it to the order form so that people know we have this piece. It's a piece that Bill wrote, several years ago, 7 or 8 years ago. This particular thing was an agenda item and a workshop item at last year's General Service Conference. I don't really think, and I believe Bob would agree, that we came up with any departures from the traditional attitude toward this subject, which has always been that the only requirement for membership in AA is a desire to stop drinking. If a person has a dual problem, an alcoholic problem and a pill problem, there's never any question about it. Of course, I mean, he's an alcoholic who happens to have a pill problem, too. He is a member of AA, if he says he is. The people who come who simply have a pill problem and have never had a drinking problem, we have always said that anyone is welcome at an AA open meeting. He's welcome to attend the meeting, but it is suggested that only members, alcoholics, speak at these meetings, and only alcoholics hold office, and that only alcoholics be considered members. Now, if they have a booze and a pill problem, then of course they can be members. I mean, could be considered members, could speak, could hold office. They just have a pill problem. What Bill said in his article, and what is pretty well the general practice, is that anybody is welcome at an open meeting who wants to come.
Yeah, I see. On that, Ed, there was if you go back to the June issue of the Message, you'll find in there a report that I gave at the assembly in May, as a result of what was worked on in New York, and there is part of that answer that we came to
at New York on this pill problem, the combination. I also have a copy at home of the complete report of what was discussed, and as Cora Louise says, there is nothing particularly that we came to an exact conclusion on, except it is a growing problem, and it's going to have to be treated as such. But if you like, I'll send you a copy of that, our findings at the conference.
Well, the reason I ask is we're in the process of starting a group that is looking
at the federal. There was a lot of discussion in this report. I'll send you a copy of that so that you can read it over.
We do have a pamphlet which we've had for many years. It's on the order form called Sedatives, Stimulants, and the Alcoholic. And I think it is always our hope that if anyone is taking pills, he'll find a way to stop in AA just like he finds a way to stop drinking in AA. Eileen, do you want to...
Any more questions? You run that right. I don't believe we have any members of the press.